But first, Jennifer Egan. Her new novel is called A Visit from the Goon Squad. It's an incredibly inventive work of fiction that's received great acclaim, including the 2010 National Book Critics Circle Award and the 2011 Pulitzer Prize. HBO recently optioned the book for a TV series. Jennifer Egan talked with Steve Paulson about her polyphonic narrative. Here's the very beginning of A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Found objects. It began the usual way in the bathroom of the L'Asimo Hotel. Sasha was adjusting her yellow eyeshadow in the mirror when she noticed a bag on the floor beside the sink that must have belonged to the woman whose peeing she could faintly hear through the vault-like door of a toilet stall. Inside the rim of the bag, barely visible, was a wallet made of pale green leather. It was easy for Sasha to recognize, looking back, that the peeing woman's blind trust had provoked her. We live in a city where people will steal the hair off your head if you give them half a chance, but you leave your stuff lying in plain sight and expect it to be waiting for you when you come back? It made her want to teach the woman a lesson. But this wish only camouflaged the deeper feeling Sasha always had, that fat, tender wallet offering itself to her hand. It seemed so dull, so life as usual, to just leave it there, rather than seize the moment, accept the challenge, take the leap, fly the coop, throw caution to the wind, live dangerously. "I get it," Cause, her therapist, said, "and take the damn thing." "You mean steal it?" He was trying to get Sasha to use that word, which was harder to avoid in the case of a wallet than with a lot of the things she'd lifted over the past year when her condition, as Cause referred to it, had begun to accelerate. 5 sets of keys, 14 pairs of sunglasses, a child's striped scarf, binoculars, a cheese grater, a pocket knife, 28 bars of soap, and 85 pens, ranging from cheap ballpoints she'd used to sign debit card slips to the Aubergine Visconti that cost $260 online, which she'd lifted from her former boss's lawyer during a contracts meeting. Sasha no longer took anything from stores. Their cold, inert goods didn't tempt her, only from people. "Okay," she said, "steal it."
Ah, that is wonderful. Thank you so much. Now, the Pulitzer Committee cited your, I'm quoting here, your inventive investigation of growing up and growing old in the digital age, displaying a big-hearted curiosity about cultural change at warp speed. Is that a fair description of your book?
I think it really is, actually. I love the fact that the word curiosity was in there because I didn't really have a clear plan at all when I started this book. In fact, I didn't even really know it would be a book. I thought I was just going to write a story or two. And I really was led by my own curiosity from one peripheral character to the next and tempted to plunge into their inner lives and reveal those lives to the reader. So curiosity was really not only the driving force in writing the book, which is always the case with me, but in a way it was the organizing principle of the book. It was what determined the structure.
Now, it's a very unusual structure, I have to say, and now on the cover it says a novel, but I know some people have described it as a series of interlocking stories rather than a novel. Does it matter how we describe it?
Well, it shouldn't. The word novel was actually not on the hardback. I didn't feel comfortable putting it there because I was worried that it would lead to certain expectations from readers that wouldn't be fulfilled. I don't tend to call it a novel myself. But on the other hand, story collection doesn't seem quite right either. I think it's just one of these works whose genre is a little bit hard to identify. But I will say that one genre I had in mind as I worked on it was that of the 70s concept album, Quadrophenia or Ziggy Stardust or Tommy, where it's one story, but it consists of pieces whose sound, if you will, and tone and feel is extremely different from each other. And there is an A side and a B side in the book.
It's so interesting to hear you say that because you are obviously playing with form here because there are recurring characters and they all kind of fit together in their own way, but the stories are told from multiple viewpoints. One chapter has footnotes, another one is written in PowerPoint form, and I guess it raises the question of whether you consciously set out to try to put it baldly, to reinvent the novel.
I mean, I honestly didn't. I think I was led to whatever reinvention has happened here, and I'm never totally sure about that, because if you look back to the beginning of the novel, you know, Cervantes, Don Quixote, and Sterne, Tristram Shandy, those books are so wild and so inventive and seem to, in a way, do almost everything that's been done since. So I sometimes think we don't give credit to the past for a lot of the inventions we think we're coming up with now, but all of that being said, I was really led by the story itself into some of these odd approaches. But I did think that if I was going to write a book that consisted of pieces rather than a central through line, if it was going to be kind of a polyphonic narrative, then I figured, why not make that as extreme as possible by having the pieces be as different from each other as they can possibly be and yet still fit together? And the thing that seemed fun about that was that I hoped to encompass a huge range of experience for the reader that could run the gamut from hilarity at times, hopefully, and material that approaches outright farce and certainly satire, and yet very straightforward, at times almost sentimental writing and even tragic. I thought it would be exciting to try to do all of that in one book, and it wouldn't be possible in a book that was told in one central through line because I think it would feel too chaotic.
Now, I'm guessing this is a hard book to describe for someone who has not actually read it, because it's told from all these different viewpoints from different characters. And there are, 13 people maybe who were narrating it at various points. But how would you sum it up if you could?
It's about a male record producer and his younger female assistant. And it follows them forward and backward through both of their lives over a period of about 50 years. And it also follows certain peripheral characters in both of their lives. It's very much about time. And it also has a lot to do with the music industry. And in fact, as I said before, is structured like a record album in that each piece sounds different from all of the others, and yet they fit together into one story.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I have to ask about the title of your book, because you mentioned time. The title is A Visit from the Goon Squad. What is the Goon Squad?
Well, the Goon Squad is time, but I didn't actually know that when I started the book. I had had that title in my mind for a long time, and when I thought of the title, which was maybe, I don't know, 12 years ago, I thought, I'm going to write a book with that title. I wonder what the book will be. And then when I was working on this idiosyncratic book, which, as I said, really sneaked up on me, I didn't know I was writing a book, and then I found myself pulled by my curiosity deeper and deeper into it, I thought, well, maybe this is A Visit from the Goon Squad. But then I thought, well, I have no reason to think that yet. What would the connection be between this book and that title? And then there came a moment fairly early when a publicist goes to visit a former rock star, now ailing and rather unhappy, and he uses the expression, time's a goon, which, as far as I know, doesn't exist, but it sort of came to me in that moment. And as soon as I read that, I thought, ah, yes, okay, this is A Visit from the Goon Squad. And I should say that one other reason it seemed an apt title is that I have two big inspirations in writing this. One was definitely Proust's In Search of Lost Time, which I read over several years with a bunch of friends, having only read a certain way into it as a much younger person. And around the same time that I was reading Proust with these friends, I was also watching The Sopranos, which I really loved. I don't watch much TV, but I thought that that series had a real power and a might to it and really worked its way into my imagination. And I asked myself how I could capture some of what made that show interesting in a book, the kind of decentralized quality of it and the way that peripheral characters would suddenly become central and even seemingly cliched characters would suddenly seem very nuanced and interesting. And those were all things I tried to do in this book. And so I guess a little nod to the goons seemed appropriate.
Well, it's interesting to hear you describe goon as the passage of time, because it suggests that that's very difficult for us to deal with, that passage of time. What it does, and this certainly comes out in your novel, is it shows regret, shows perhaps mistakes in the past, and sort of grappling with what we've done previously in our lives.
For sure. And I think especially the context in which the expression is invoked is really in the physical sense, in the sense that this guy is physically having lots of problems. And I don't know if anyone would say that that time is good to us physically in the long haul. But what I was really interested in was change and the shock of change, because I think we're very aware of time on a micro level. You know, I'm late. Uh-oh, I left the cookies in too long, that kind of thing. Oh, darn, where did the week go? But the big sense, the heft of time passing and the big changes that it brings seem to often come as a kind of shock. You know, seeing someone you haven't seen in a long time and noticing that they look different, suddenly being aware of how much older your children are. I wanted to get at the surprises and the reversals, which is something Proust was so interested in. You know, the prostitute becomes an aristocrat. You know, his book is full of those shocking, almost unimaginable transformations. But they're positive and negative, and the same is true in Goon Squad. A guy who has been living an almost derelict life is elevated to the status of a folk hero. The ailing rock star doesn't actually end up dying. He ends up recovering and owning a dairy farm. So I was interested in all those little shocks.
Certainly one of the most daring things you've done is you have a chapter told entirely from the perspective. I mean, it's a PowerPoint presentation. It's not just a short chapter, too. It's a really long chapter. And you're conveying a lot of emotional content through a PowerPoint.
Well, I would even go further and say I was able to deliver more emotional content because of the PowerPoint, in the sense that PowerPoint has a cold corporate feel to it. And I think that the balance of that allowed me to be possibly more overtly sentimental than I would ever try to be in a conventional chapter.
So I have to ask you, why did you write a chapter in PowerPoint?
Well, many reasons. Of course, remember that I was trying to find a new technical approach for each chapter. And what that meant was to find a new angle, a new story that would require a different technical approach each time. So I tried all kinds of things. I tried epic poetry, but unfortunately, I'm a horrible poet, so that didn't work out. PowerPoint had been intriguing me for a while, even though I had never actually used it, and I would not call myself very technologically inclined. I didn't know why I was so drawn to it, except that it seemed suddenly to be ubiquitous. And I thought that was the reason. But in fact, once I finally overcame a few hurdles in the form of not having PowerPoint on my computer, not wanting to pay for it, not having enough memory in my laptop to hold it, once I had sort of worked through all of that and actually purchased it and was finally working in it, I realized that what had really been driving me to it the whole time is that PowerPoint as a form is built around the same kind of structure that Goon Squad is, in the sense that it consists of isolated moments with pauses in between them. That's what PowerPoint is. First of all, it allowed me to, in a way, reveal the structural idea behind the book right there. And also, you know, pauses are a big part of our perception of time. It's often when we have a sense that of time briefly stopping that we're aware of its passage. And I had gotten very interested in pauses in songs because they function similarly. Well, the best milieu in which to explore all of that was a form like PowerPoint, which is built around a counterpoint between moments and pauses. So it really ended up serving me well in that particular case, I think.
And it's worth pointing out that one of the characters in that chapter is this young boy who is obsessed with what he calls the great rock and roll pause, you know, these pauses in a song. Why does that idea interest you so much?
Well, it was another case where I wasn't quite sure why it interested me so much. I had encountered it in a book that I had read in doing research on the music industry called So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star by a drummer named Jacob Schlichter, who was with the band Semisonic. And they had a huge hit in 1998 called Closing Time that I think most people would recognize. And there's a pause in that song.
Closing time, time for you to go out to the places you will.
Jacob Schlichter talks about how that pause came to be in the recording of the song, and there was a particular producer involved, Bob Clearmountain, who's known for inserting pauses in songs, and in fact, they are called Clearmountain pauses. I don't know, I just, that idea just caught in my mind, and I was dying to somehow use pauses in the book, but I couldn't find the right way. I had an academic at one point who was writing a book about pauses in songs, but that particular piece never quite worked. But I think the reason I was so obsessed with it, actually was exactly the same thing that led me to the PowerPoint. So it was perfect that they all converge, which was that pauses make us know that time is passing. There's a pause and you think maybe the song has ended, but then the song continues and you're relieved. But then you also know that the song will actually end. And in a certain way, that's a metaphor for the way we perceive time in our lives.
Well, it's interesting also to hear this from the perspective of a fiction writer, because I suppose it would be very easy just to write a novel that kind of races along, that doesn't give you that time for pausing. But that's not what you wanted to do. I mean, you wanted to sort of force us to step back and reflect and think about things, think about how things turned out the way they did, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I felt, too, that just letting time unfold in a more real-time way, which is what Proust did, didn't feel, well, first of all, it would just be literally mimicking him, but also it didn't quite feel of this moment. I think we live in a moment that's full of gaps and shortcuts and a sense of speeding up, a sense of acceleration, and then moments when that acceleration seems to stop. I guess we live in a moment that feels kind of herky-jerky to me, and I guess I just wanted to capture a sense of that and to suggest a whole epic sweep, but in little parts, through the refraction of little parts, rather than one huge, long monster of a whole.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Jennifer Egan is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel A Visit from the Goon Squad. She spoke with Steve Paulson.